Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Progressive Snapshot can save you money based on how you drive and how much you drive. So the safer you drive, the more money you could save. Now, if you didn't hear that because you were laying on the horn while driving, let me say it again. Are you a race car driver? Because if you are, you're in the wrong car and you took a wrong turn off the track a while ago. And all those cars you're trying to pass all save money with Progressive Snapshot, while you probably don't. So who's really winning? And if you did hear it the first time, nice work. You'd love Snapshot from Progressive because it rewards safe drivers. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Snapshot not available in California and North Carolina or from all agents.
Welcome back into another edition of The Kickabout here on The Blue Room. I am your co-host, Rob Vera, joined by my other co-host, Mark Mosey. And our third this week is the always lovely, always got her hair tied back in a bun, gorgeous Kate Riley James, who makes it a point every time we get on one of these recordings to, for some reason, apologize about how she looks, which I don't understand. Like, you understand this is an audio medium, Kate. Like, you need to really play into the illusion that you're just keeping it hot 24/7, and you know, but the constant apology. I mean, look, you're with two feminist men here. You don't have to apologize.
I mean, I know, you guys are fully schooled as well. Thank you for having me back. As you can see, I've made absolutely zero effort whatsoever this evening. I've been painting. I've been in the park all day with the kids. I've been painting some community signs, going to community garden for some random judging thing tomorrow that I got involved in. I'm literally sat covered in paint, but I've got a glass of wine, so everything's fine.
That's always the common denominator, is Kate.
Yeah.
No matter what, she's going to have booze with
her. Oh, yeah.
So that's a virtue, sweetheart. I really appreciate
today.
That. Mark, you commented before. So just to kind of go behind the scenes a little bit, because I know you guys love stuff like this, but last kickabout with Mark and Adam, I don't know if you noticed it, but I feel like we got some really good feedback from that. You know, I mean, we get decent feedback for a third tier Blue Room show or whatever we're considered at this point. But I do think that a big part of that was Mark is an incredibly, I think Mark is really kind of finding his niche as the number 10 of this thing. You know, I think he is like, he's very good at being a host. I mean, it sounds a little too prepared. Like, he actually worked on it a little bit, but, which, you know, I'm thoroughly against normally, but it was such a good show. I asked Mark if he wanted to kind of lead things off today and sort of drive the bus, and he just was like, oh, I've got nothing left after today. Mark, tell me about your day down in the salt mines that is the pharmacy world, buddy.
Oh, fucking hell, mate. Fucking just relentless. First of all, I should definitely mention, you've just reminded me of Snooker from last week, which has in all of the dark moments of the week, Rob, kept me going. Like, if you could
hear that, Kate, Snooker last week.
just audio clip me random words now and again, just to keep me a little bit buoyant. But
yeah. I'm too scared to ask. I've not listened to this yet.
So
well, you know what, Mark? Here's an experiment. Kate, if I use the word snooker, what would you think that I was talking about?
Oh, do you know, between you, Mosey, and Adam, probably something mildly inappropriate.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's, well, first of all, I'm offended by that. I go to great fucking lengths to be, you know, really nice on this show. So, you know, whatever. And classy. No. But if I, you know how I mispronounce words, right? So if I, and I apparently butchered this word that I did not know I'd butchered. What if I said snooker, what do you think that I'm talking about?
It made
about?
Me think of snooker, first off.
Yeah. I'm amazed you got that.
Oh, Rob.
It looks like snooker. I don't know what you people want. You know, I mean, you know, we look. I just want to tell the majority of the listeners to this pod that A, you're welcome for having America, you know, actually get your language right. And B, snooker is, now I'm obviously 80% kidding. But snook, I still don't think I can say it without, like, Mark can see my face when I try to pronounce it correctly. Snooker. Like, I have to, like, there's this little crinkle in my nose and my eyebrows when I try to say snooker. Like, I'm asking a question.
See how painful that is for you as well.
Now, can I ask this too, Mark? Because we didn't have a chance to get into it last week when you guys were belittling me about it, but is... Snooker, is that right? Snooker?
Nailed it.
Okay. Is snooker the one where you have like the little things in the middle of the table that like the that you have to kind of avoid, or is it just straight up pool, like a pool table only longer or something like that?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. Those kind of bumpers in the middle of a table. I have
That's
no
another
idea.
Game.
What, like posh pinball?
Yeah, I have no idea what that game is. No.
But Mark knows what I'm talking about. Okay, for anyone listening, if you guys know what the billiards
sneaker
game with the bumpers in the middle of the table are, please let me know. There's a game. There's a name for it. Well, okay. So here's the other question, Kate. Maybe you know this. Is snook? Do you guys like? Is there just regular pool? Like we call it pool or billiards is the fancy word if you want to be fancy. Is that different than snooker?
Yes.
How?
It's more complicated and it's more difficult.
Than snooker?
No, other way around.
Or snooker is more complicated. Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay.
This is all getting very in Rob the cricket laws. And like scoring in tennis, I feel like is that something that you're okay with scoring in tennis, or is that just another minefield?
Okay, so tennis, I get tennis. Okay, tennis clearly decided that like, you know, sort of like cricket, like you know, we're gonna have a somewhat logical scoring system, but we're gonna throw in the fun and complete lack of logic of that scoring system that cricket sort of like we're gonna throw in the weird vocabulary of cricket, right? Now, with I understand, like I know what deuce means, giggle. I know what you know. I know that it goes like you don't say zero; it's love, and then it's 15. And then it's 30. And for some reason, instead of 45, ha ha, fucker, it's not 45, it's 40. For no reason whatsoever, is it 40? 45, like, is it 45? Like, it should be 45, and it's 40. And as a kid, that self-destructed my brain for a bit, but I picked up on it because, you know, I watched Wimbledon in the summer, like, you know, most kids did. Or not most kids, but it was on TV. You know why? Because during the summertime when my mom would normally be watching soap operas during the day because she was a school teacher and she had that time off, Wimbledon would take over and be on instead. So that's how I learned about the tennis scoring system. Cricket is just, I think cricket is it's an insider practical joke on people like me. Like, I think you guys are making up the scoring and the rules and the terminology as you go along. Like there was some word I heard the other day about cricket that a duck. Someone referred to the term duck
Yeah, or a golden duck.
I'd never heard of that before. What's duck?
When you bowled out, right? With no runs, essentially.
Yeah. And a golden duck, just to totally blow your mind a little bit further, is a batsman's first ball, where obviously he's not scored any runs yet, and gets out on that ball.
The thing is, though, all you need to do, when you go to the cricket, you're actually given flyers, if you like, that have got four and six on them.
Oh, really?
That's the crowd getting involved. And depends whether you go for a test match, I suppose. But for the first few hours, you get involved and you hold them up. And then when you're absolutely shit-faced, you rip them up into tiny bits and everyone does the Mexican wave and you just throw them up. That's all you need to know. That's it.
Well, I was going to say, when you also go to cricket, you are also given a pint of beer, followed by 45 other pints of beer. So as much as you talk about being sporting purists and traditionalists, Rob, the reason that 95% of cricket fans go to watch cricket is for an almighty drinking sesh. Mm-hmm. And I know you'll find that really difficult to believe over here, because you've seen what connoisseurs of fine alcohol we are, but it is quite simply a binge. To go back to our original topic, bumper pool is different to snooker.
I've never even heard of bumper pool.
It's called bumper pool.
So I have no idea what bumper pool is, but I would say snooker is similar to cricket in terms of it's got quite a traditionalist feel. It's probably one of those sports that most sports fans over here think needs some form of injection of actual excitement. So Robert, a snooker table will have 15, I want to say, red balls, followed by a yellow, green, brown, blue, pink, black. So if you've ever seen that set up, that is snooker, my friend.
Marty going into a coma. Do they have numbers on them, like pool balls?
No. We've got this thing over here where we can just know and memorize things.
Association.
Yeah.
Well, how do you memorize something if they're all red balls with no number on them?
Because they all score the same, right? So all the reds are worth a value, but the other colors are worth a different value.
Like,
I don't know what 15, any of those
then
30, values are.
Then 37.5 and then 42.3.
19 degrees for the green. No one knows.
Can I ask a booze? I want to ask a booze question, because I've meant to get into this topic because Mark, you mentioned this before about cricket. Like, obviously, the American cousin of or relative of cricket is baseball.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
We have batting and innings, but it literally uses much more straightforward set of rules, and it doesn't go on for 10 hours at a time or whatever, even though it does go on quite a while sometimes. But one of the true traditions of baseball, like, you don't even have to love baseball. You just want to, if you enjoy being on a, at a day out with a beer in your hand, then it's incredible. So here's my question. When you go to cricket matches over there, can you have beer in the stands? A, and then B, if you can have beer in the stands at cricket, why is it such a faux pas to have food and drink in the stands at Goodison or any football game? Like, why is that a thing? I don't understand.
It is a bit weird. I've always wanted to do a big international rugby game as well, just for that, because at times, and it probably has been finals or whatever, cameras will zoom in on people with bottles of Prosecco and stuff and actual champagne flutes. I was like, they're ripping each other's ears off. How is this more refined than us just going in the main stand at Goodison? I'd drink Prosecco at Goodison. It would seem a bit weird, and it would probably be a plastic glass. But
we are so much angrier, though, aren't we?
Well, yeah.
is that the reason, Mark? Like, why cricket but not football? Is my question. My main question.
I mean, we've gotten this far without, to my knowledge, lashing a pint of beer at a fielder. I imagine that would probably happen. If, say, for example, Rob, if on Friday is the first game, we were to say next year you can have a pint in the stand, you can have a bottle of beer in the stand, whatever. I don't reckon we'd get through two weekends of Premier League football without a pint of beer being lashed at a player.
That's a fair shout.
This weird aggressive tribalism that sport that football, has taken on over and above other sports, and that that is quite simply how it is. And I know that it shouldn't be like that. And I'm trying to think of other countries on the continent that I think, I'm taking Germany, for example, because they just have beer with everything. I'm pretty sure you're allowed to have a drink in the stands there. But yeah, we quite simply just cannot be trusted. To go back,
you guys have beer with everything. I've literally never encountered a culture of people who love to drink as much as you people do. And that's why it shocks me. Granted, I haven't been to Ireland yet, and I know in Scotland, but I know that that will be a cultural experience from a booze perspective as well. But I just don't understand why the line got drawn there. Like, okay, so for instance, at a lot of sporting events here, you can have a beer, but everything is served in like a, you know, it's a plastic cup. But that's the same at Goodison when you go down, into the concourse and grab a beer. But I was thinking too that the difference, of course, is that when you're talking about all the whatever measures that they're going to theoretically take to kind of avoid people bunching up too much. I mean, once you've let people back in, you've let people back in. And all I'm imagining, for those of you who've been to Goodison, and most of you who listen to this are, but I know there's a lot of Americans who haven't, or non-Americans or whomever has not been to Goodison, but it's an old stadium and everything is a little bit more compact there. Right. And so when you're down in the concourse areas, getting a beer, getting something, you literally, it's a sprint at halftime to get down there, get a beer. And then everyone is hunched up, ass to elbows, you're scrunched up like this and you're just drinking. And I'm just thinking to myself, that feels like a COVID nightmare.
You've just described the best part of the game for me.
I know. Look, I don't necessarily mind it because I do sort of oddly enjoy the tradition of everyone forcing themselves down into the, down the steps and to get a beer at halftime and trying to chug it, because it's much safer clearly to have people binge drinking as fast as possible in close quarters than it is to allow them to leisurely bring that beer with them up to the stands. Like, I think you overestimate, like, as much as there's this idea of them throwing a beer at a player, I'm like, I don't know how many people in a plastic cup or what have you are going to be able to, are really going to have the arm strength to really get it too far. Listen, and besides, I wouldn't want to incur the wrath of some security guy who's going to, put my head in the mud or something like that.
This is how much we can't be trusted. It won't necessarily be a player who's actually made the squad. This will just be if Iwobi's on the bench come the weekend. That's just a challenge. And also, half-time
I
appreciate that I'm in the minority, but what the things I will do for a hot dog at Goodison at half-time, talk about elbows out and getting straight down those two flights of stairs. That's what it's, and I don't even have to chug it. I can take it back to my seat. It's all good.
Yeah, the
worst, but by the way, Mark, I think I've mentioned to you, worst hot dog I've ever had was at Goodison. I'm telling you. And by the way, it's not a blight on all the food, because the cheese and onion pie was literally the very, very first thing I ever had at Goodison. Loved it. I know it was microwaved and I could taste the plastic burning a hole
MSG,
in my soul.
MSG.
Didn't care. But that hot dog, dude, was a crime against you.
Oh, it's so good.
Mark, go ahead.
Not for me to take this show down the MasterChef route, but the outrageous sausage to bun ratio of those hot dogs is not to be ignored. If we are to take Bramley Moore seriously and really progress this football club into one of Europe's elite, we need either more bread or to just settle on a smaller sausage. And they're the important facts that need to be ironed out before any stadium move can take
place.
That's
where I draw the line, mate. I'm sorry. I'm not willing to settle.
See, I'm okay with me. I'm trying actively post-COVID after I've gained a little weight to cut down on my carbs. So give me the more meat and less bread and what have you.
The best conversation we've had about potential food options at Bramley Moore Dock has got to have been with Matt Jones, who suggested that we should have cheese boards. An array of cheese should be
amazing. Oh my God. He is such a Fulham fan. It is ridiculous. Like, I swear to God,
He's so that's
are you sure that wasn't Patty Boylan? Because that is some Tory. That is some living Tory.
What are you talking about? Was it at Villa or somewhere that they've got something that's just not your usual, you know, like blokes going the match fast food shit. I think he was talking about, was it at Villa or somewhere? He'll probably listen to this and pull me up on it anyway. But yeah, and he was just like, oh, you know, imagine it though. I was just like, cheese, Matt, really?
But not just cheese, a cheese board. That's charcuterie, okay? Like, I'm thinking charcuterie with the cheese and the meat and what have you. And like, is he going to put his little dainty gloves on while he eats it and, you know, nibbles on it
and
you know, splashes out with water and then weighs in on it and everything? You know?
We're talking about going down for like a pint or something at halftime. I reckon for regular match day goers over years, there's a few kind of weird niche things that happen in the game that might kind of just make it a little bit more magical and become subtly part of your routine. And I always think things that really incite emotion in me are like when a player goes down for a penalty for the opposition team and you're just waiting for the referee to blow his whistle. If you could just bottle that moment. Another one is like the noise when all the seats go up in the Gladys Street when we go forward. When we talk about all these things that you'll miss from the current ground. The other one that always really sticks with me, and as soon as it happens, you know what's going to happen in the next 10 seconds. And it's if a player goes down injured and the physio comes on around about 38 or 39 minutes. Because as soon as the referee signals to the sideline to get the physio on, I reckon about 30,000 seats go up and every single person dives down underground for a pint. And it's just knowing. It's often playing this mental game on like 34 minutes when someone goes down injured and you think, is this too early? Or are we going to go?
Oh yeah,
and then don't go out of play for like 10 minutes, and you're like, "Oh fuck, someone's gonna have to make a move here just to let everyone else know that
it's time."
Well, I think when you're a visitor like me, you're so hesitant to miss any of the live action, right? Whereas if you're local and you're a season ticket holder, you're there all the time, like. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've seen all this shit so many times, and you know it's Everton. I mean, what's nothing good can happen by you waiting to get in that line. And I understand all that, but I wonder how many of those things will still carry over to the new stadium because it's sort of like how like there's an old expression that a church isn't a building; it's the people in it, or whatever. I'm just using that loosely. Like I feel Goodison is that way, in that if you take over the same like. You know, completely traumatized, PTSD-ridden souls that have been in Goodison all those years and put them in a new stadium, they're still going to have a lot of the same reactions to things. But who knows? It'll be an interesting experiment.
The best thing that can possibly happen with Bramley Moor is that we adopt a more NFL fan base approach and we turn up at the park and ride or outside Bramley Moor 8 hours ahead of the game with a barbecue, your nan and granddad, shit ton of food, mates, umbrella, like what's it called, parasol thing, you know, sun umbrella thing, living your best life in the absolute pissing, driving rain on the waterfront. That's what I'm talking about.
The best thing about American football, there's no question, is that we treat those games part of it, you know what, Kate? Part of that is because we only have in the regular season, and they're expanding it this year to 17, but we only have 16, normally 16 regular season games. And in college football, it's usually like 12 or 13, maybe. And so it becomes, especially these more traditional grounds like this, it's an event. And you only, and by the way, if there are only 16 games, there's only 8 home games, right?
Yeah, or, of course.
You know, and so really everyone makes a big deal out of it. And that includes just showing up early. If you have a 1 p.m. or a noon kickoff here, then you're barbecuing at 8 in the morning and drinking at 8 in the morning. And no one even cares. It's like being in the airport. It's 5:30 in the morning. Pizza, you bet. You know, like,
I mean, I would be willing to sacrifice half of the season if it meant that it felt like it was like a massive event like that. Oh, it'd be so good.
I would sacrifice 18 home games. We had one really intriguing playoff, which is essentially all we really live for every season. Yeah. But yeah, touch on what you said, Rob, about, you know, coming over and visiting the sport and having a slightly different approach to what the, in inverted commas, regulars would do. So we came over to Florida a few years ago and went to watch Tampa Bay Rays play the Yankees.
Oh, the worst stadium in all of Major League Baseball. Yes.
Stadium. They were at the time also the worst team. I'm reliably informed that they're not now.
They're now one of the best. Yes.
There you go.
They bounce back and forth every few years. Yeah.
Good timing. So yeah, we were kind of close to the stadium, but really, you know, clock watching about how late we were going to be trying to get into the ground. Ended up, you know, lashing the car outside somewhere, running to the turnstile. Probably got there at the top of the second innings, thinking, oh my God, we've missed everything. And when we went into the concourse, it's just like, there's just a sea of people buying merchandise, getting appropriately ratioed hot dogs, buying beer.
Appropriately ratioed hot dogs.
The actual
we've got our show title, by the way.
The sport couldn't have been any less relevant to people. That is, as much as you do need that balance, I think the American way of ingesting sport is just amazing, because it's not a total disregard for the sport and elements, I think, as much as people like to think that. But there is an absolute total commitment to making it a socially enjoyable experience. We don't really have that. We kind of have to manufacture that ourselves by going into Liverpool City Centre or doing something that is not based at the stadium. It's not organised by the club, because that is quite simply just not how we do things over here. But it'll be interesting to see as places like Bramley Moor and other stadiums crop up. And I know Tottenham try to do this a little bit as well, in that, do they make it a more holistic experience of a match day? Because we've said this for years and years, and it's been highlighted at multiple stages of the stadium consultation, is that if you offer nice food, nice drink, I don't know, comfortable areas to sit, whatever it may be, go and watch the early game before Everton play, people will indulge in what the club have to offer. Quite frankly, the offerings elsewhere are always so much better. So that I know that, I mean, this is stressing me out from a season ticket point of view leading up to Saturday, but I would say that
most... Do you even have a ticket yet, Mark? Are you one of the lucky few?
So I would say that the average Everton fan experience, having been to a few seasons worth of football, is you probably rock up anywhere between 2:45 and 3:00, watch the game, and if you're lucky, you're still going to be there at 5, because if not, you've already started making that trudge back to the ship and mate.
Right.
Because that's just your defined 2 hours of misery for your weekend. But yeah, I'm not going to lie, Rob, I put full investment into Everton rolling out an electronic season ticket program this year. And I'll currently record at 8 p.m. on Wednesday evening. To say I am nervous is an understatement.
Yeah, that's been all over my timeline today, is people who, for whatever reason, thought that, look, I want to get this out there again, guys. It's almost like the way I talk about Coleman. I like him as a person. I just don't really rate him as a player much anymore. I love Everton as a community. I love Everton as a force for good. But this is the same club that they sucker people every season into giving them money so they can watch preseason game match streams that never work. And you thought that their electronic ticketing system, which was brand new, was going to just be, you know, go off without a hitch. Like, it's, come on, Everton are just, there are certain things they're not great at. And what's ironic about that is that I would also generally say that the Everton fan services are a collection of some of the nicest, most hardworking people. I mean it. Especially if you are someone coming from out of the country, let them know you're coming. They go bend over backwards. But you sometimes when you're dealing with these electronic things, these technical things, it's just
the most sensible thing here is just to hold your hands up and say, everyone needs to come and get a printed ticket. You know what? It's a fuck up, but that needs to happen so that you all get in properly. But I totally get on board with why that is the last thing that they want to do. And stuff like this must just be an absolute nightmare to sort out. But luckily, Twitter is dead patient, so it should all be fine.
Well, they want no contact for everything. I know, right? But they want no contact for everything is what I heard this weekend, is that they no cash, right? Like cards for no touch transactions for everything.
Yeah.
That's going to be a shit show too, because, you know, look, I think when you can hand over like whatever, Fiverr or whatever for a beer versus I'm going to scan the card. And now hopefully they can speed that up and it's not too bad, but look, there'll be some kinks to work out. I'm sure. But I, you know, as someone who, I think the last thing I'll say about these sort of stadium experiences is that when you can find the balance between like a really cool historical ground, but one that also does some of those other things really well, like I think that can be very cool. But it'll be interesting to see how Bramley Moore does it. I'm going to tease this now because it's not totally 100% confirmed, but next month, I'm taking my first trip, a business trip, and I don't know how long. I'm going up to my home office in Boston, and I apparently am going to get to go to my very first Red Sox game at Fenway Park, which is Fenway is the closest to me. Fenway or maybe Wrigley are the closest approximations to Goodison Park here in America. I can't wait. It's the seats are narrow and the concourses are uncomfortable, and I'm like, oh, this is the closest to an Everton game. I'll probably get to season, right? I think what's interesting, Mark, is what you bring up. Like, it'll be really fascinating, and Kate, what you said about like an NFL style experience. It will be interesting to see what the club do to keep that balance between keeping things kind of authentic and not overly slick and commercialized, while still providing fans with more incentive to, you know, frankly, spend their money at the game, but also to do so in a way that encourages congregation and community before and after the match. You know, and I know that that's not the culture too, because like the first time I went to Goodison, where were we, Mark, having Guinnesses before the game? You, me, and Matt and my brother before the United game, and like
we go to the
it was on New Year's Day. It was on New Year's Day. Like, it was my very first game. The Brick. Oh, yeah. We were at the Brick. Yeah, of course. And I just remember feeling so nervous of looking at my watch, like, are we going to go? Like, this marriage is going to start in like 10 minutes, and they're ordering another round. And I'm just like, okay. They assured me. Matt just kept looking at me and assuring me it would be fine. And I was just like, all right. So, anyway. Now that we've talked about all that, guys, I do want to talk about the season a little bit. Mm-hmm. As I said before, I don't really have the desire to go into a hardcore football discussion or positional analysis or any of those things that will remind us of how little has changed with the squad in general over the last few months. But I don't also want to go super negative, right? I like to leave the most negative version of myself on Twitter, if at all possible, because I like people arguing with me about why I'm not more enthusiastic about the side and all that. But all joking aside, like, let's be frank, and this is at least how I feel, and I'm really curious as to how you guys feel too. I can't remember a time. Or I'm sorry, I can remember a time, but it's been a while, where so much of the fan base, it feels like, and again, my barometer for this comes from my interactions with you guys on the pod, what I listen to from you guys, and then obviously interactions on social media. There's always a joke out there about how Everton Facebook is a completely different universe than Everton Twitter, but all that aside, it's been a while since we've gone into a season with this level of, you can call it negativity, but I almost feel like it's and some even refer to it as apathy, but I think I would probably characterize it almost as resignation, that we're probably going to be just about a mid-table side. I don't think anyone, I have not heard anyone with a straight face other than the most optimistic Blues talk about Europe. Everton are taking this Brexit means Brexit shit seriously. You know, I mean, clearly based on the results of the last few seasons, but I just, You know, like, I think my basic idea, even before Carlo was sacked and at the end of that season, as disappointing as it was just that, okay, the good thing, if we can find a silver lining in all of this, and Mark, you and I talked about this quite a bit, is that it's not like we're unsure about what the problems are, right? We know exactly what we need. There's a complete imbalance on the pitch. You need more production from the right-hand side. That means a new right back, a new right-sided attacker. And, hey, if you want to get crazy with it, let's also bring in another creative force in midfield because, you know, James, as much as you like him, is not someone who's going to be – he's just not shown consistently over the last several years of his career that he's going to be fit for extended periods of time. There's someone else who we can't – I guess we're not even – I don't even know if we're allowed to say his name, but he probably won't be around for a while. And he is – all I can tell you about is he's a player for Everton. So, you know, like there are these basic things there. But to me it was get a right back, get a right-sided attacker in. Hopefully you get through the summer in Copa America and the Euros without any injuries. We did that. Luka Dean came back fine. Yerry Mina came back fine. Calvert-Lewin, by, you know, he's got a toe thing, but it doesn't seem serious. So feel, you know, I thought you just add and fill basic holes. I wasn't even thinking like we got to go out and spend $100 million or anything crazy like that. I just thought go buy like a 20 million pound right back and buy like a 15, 20 million pound like wing player. And then let's just go for it and see if you know, a more competent management style would carry us through. Well, we haven't invested much in the squad. I do like what I've seen from Damari Gray and Andreas Townsend, but they're squad players. They weren't brought here, at least in theory. Even Andreas Townsend in his first interview was told, and he said it to the interviewer, they've told me that I'm not really here to start most games, but I'm going to try to prove them wrong. Well, guess what? I think he's going to be starting quite a few games given what we have not done in the window. And I am, again, I'm aware of, and this is the other layer to it, it may not be FFP, but it may be the Premier League specific financial rules that whatever mostly apply to teams 7 through 20 in the league. it just does. And so we're in this position where I you know how I love the transfer window. I've almost given up every day getting up and looking at Twitter and looking for news because until we sell players, like it's become more stark than ever. And I read Patty and Greg's piece in The Athletic today. Like basically it's just pretty black and white. We may have money, but we can't spend the money we have. And until we sell players, and it feels very much like until I read something substantive about us selling anyone, there's no point in even investing a micro cell of my being into, you know, a rumor about an incoming player. Like, I don't want to hear about Denzel Dumfries or Dwight McNeil or any of these names that you occasionally hear. I mean, I keep hearing about the guy from Newcastle, Sean Longstaff, or aren't there two Longstaffs?
Yeah.
They're both weird looking dudes, but either way, I think that I just don't have it in to invest in any incoming rumors until we get guys sold. And so it leaves me overall to where we started with this kind of like, well, you know, we're going to be kind of a mid-table mediocre team, but maybe we can just, you know, win the games at home we should. And maybe it'll just, maybe if they don't embarrass us much, and maybe if they decide to take a siege mentality, it could be one of those types of seasons. But yeah, I'm grasping at straws here. I'm not abject and negative. I'm just not really that excited.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll start with you. Like, what? I want to take your temperature here. How do you feel? You're usually relatively optimistic too, but I mean, how do you feel about Everton going into the season?
Oh, I have full on transfer ambivalence. I'm just knackered with it. And you know why? Because it's kind of like Christmas when you're a kid, right? Everybody in the UK who was born early 80s, let's say, wanted a Mr. Frosty. And you know why? Because it was fucking magical. That's why, right? And hardly anybody got it. I don't know how it sold out everywhere, because it seems like nobody I know got it. And you know,
what's a Mr. Frost?
It's like it made kind of like, it looked like a snowman. It was like a and you got like you'd put like crushed ice and stuff in it, right? Or you put ice in it.
Oh, the little snow cone maker,
right?
Thing.
Yeah. So and it would make a snow cone. Oh my god, how quick are you at googling, Rosie? Jesus.
I know.
Right. Awesome. Everybody wanted it. And you would maybe you get like a bit of a cut price version. Maybe you get something else that was awesome. Maybe you get something else that was genuinely mediocre because the 80s were fucking hard, man. Right. But it wasn't quite the magic. And I'm at the point now where every transfer, I'm like, yeah, we can totally do this. And like you said, I'm usually ridiculously overly optimistic about everything. Going, sweet, we're getting Messi. Yeah. Awesome. That'll do for me. You know, and I was happy. But realistically, I'm so knackered with it. And the ongoing discourse of backwards and forwards on Twitter, of Everton fanbase Twitter, I am so done. And I'm genuinely having gone in all guns blazing because of Carlo last year. I was like, we're going to win the league. It's going to be awesome. You know, this is the magic. Carlo was the magic for me. Unfortunately, he was also the magic for lots of other people in a different country, and off he went. I just don't think our stock is good enough, or we've done good enough PR about our stock to offload what we need to bring in the magic. It's just, I just don't think it's going to happen now.
Yeah, Kate, I want to stop you right there because I want to, you said something there that really caught my attention. I've said this to a few people, but it's when you talk about kind of the PR, the image, the things that clubs have to do to sort of make their own players seem attractive, even if it's for PR purposes for your own fan base, it does have a kick-on effect to, you know, other teams being interested in them or what have you. I don't know that that's 100% of the issue, but I've openly asked the question, can you imagine another, what you would characterize big club, sending a young, talented striker out to one of the largest, richest clubs in all of Europe, and he goes there and he succeeds and he scores. Who else would have a hard time selling him but us? Like, I know that seems, people will roll their eyes. I'm like, I just feel like if this is the neighbors across the park, if this is Arsenal, if this is anyone else just trying to offload this guy who just scored a bunch of goals for fucking PSG, like the, now, granted, there's two sides to all these stories. Maybe it's Keane's intransigence about not wanting to go anywhere but PSG that's, you know, killed his market. But it just feels like another chapter in, you know, in the long history of Everton's inability to offload players. Like, I understand when you can't offload one need Chink Tosin. Okay, I get that. He's you know, his hair transplant is the most, you know, the most successful medical miracle that he's encountered. But it's don't even get me started on Andros Townsend. My God, that hair transplant is amazing. That's the best. That's like a polio vaccine for me. But having said that, it's just kind of like, why can't we get him for even if you told me now, hey, you're only going to get back what you paid for him. I would take it. And I don't know why we can't get that for a guy who scored, what was it, Mark? Like, he scored like 15 goals last season, 17 goals, something like that in all competitions,
twice,
including twice Champions League games or something. What was that?
Probably twice what Richarlison scored, I'd say.
Yeah, no, that's what's so crazy is that if we were trying to sell, now again, different players, different everything, right. But yeah, like it really is.
This is what
really
I mean. It will play a relatively small part, because the bottom line is that stats and data is what it comes down to, obviously. But when you look outside, if you take it off the pitch, you know, it's, and that's also comes down to agents as well. Obviously, that's what their agents are doing for them, you know, on what's the downtime, if you like, from their profession. But that will include like endorsements, you know, whether it's, you know, whether that's sponsorship or, you know, or working alongside like charity and that type of stuff as well. There's a whole persona to be managed, as well as the data, you know, and the wider PR that could, but I do think that as a club, we struggle with that kind of thing. I think that's a weakness across the board. Like I said, I appreciate it plays a small part, but it's still important. And I do think it hinders us. So again, you know, that's wider club image as well. You know, if you're looking for, we need to bring in, like I said, magic for me. We need to bring in, you know, a top class player. And, you know, if you look at the club and it looks like a monumental shitstorm, because it turns out, oh, actually, yeah, it looks as if like he's not in favour with Carlo, or, and I do mean Carlo looking at last season, or, you know, he's not massively focused on bringing up talent from the academy, you know, or whatever it is. If you come in as a young player, you know, with potential like that, it's got it. The PR's got to fit as well. And I think it is something that we struggle with. So at the minute, I think the club has bolstered with, I've got to applaud, I think the multicoloured shirt that has literally sold out in, I think, what, with minutes, that they'll be wearing during warm-up, am I right, at the weekend? And then the women are actually wearing it as well at the weekend for their fixture as well, Everton Women, which is incredible. So we're being bolstered, you know, with good news, with good PR. We've also put a spade in the ground this week, I think it was, or end of last week, you know, at Bramley Moor, which is fantastic. It's all good press. It's moving us forward. It's building a bit of momentum for the beginning of the season. And now, for me, I'm just going to sit back and let it unfold. I am done with, like, tearing my hair out. Never mind.
Right.
Transplants. I'm done with all of the to-ing and fro-ing. We've got to be able to see what Rafa can do with what we've got. And now it's people calling for Brand's head as well. And I'm just, drama is absolutely draining me. I want to hear the roar of Goodison, and I want to see the lads on the pitch come the weekend.
Mark, I want your thoughts now, but one thing I will add to what Kay just said is that it's amazing we've gotten this far into the conversation, and really none of the angst and none of the real concern, like it's almost like we've moved on from the Rafa part of this equation, even though we all, you know what I mean? Like we all, well, it's like we all know that, and Matt has predicted, you know, Matt Jones predicted, and he's usually right about stuff like this, that, you know, a few losses on the bounce and then it definitely will turn our attention to Rafa more. But there is this sense, and maybe this is part of the PR and the videos they released until they came back from Florida and then didn't release any photos or videos for over a week, and the social media accounts all went quiet. It was really bizarre. But it does feel sort of like he's the least of our concerns. Like you feel like he'll get the most that he probably can out of this squad. But I fear that what we're about to see is that it's not the, even though I definitely think Carlo was a very more underwhelming as a manager of players than I expected. I don't worry about, I think any of 20 competent guys can come in here and be the manager. I'm just concerned about the squad, and our inability to add to it is tied directly to our inability to sell players that should, even with personality quirks, be sellable.
Realistically, the club in terms of its PR and comms could have actually pulled an absolute blinder there, because there was so much kickoff over Rafa coming in. That could have been perfectly managed in the fact that we're no longer talking about Rafa. We're still pre-season. It's only been a few weeks, realistically. Yeah. And yet the eyes have been on Richarlison because of the Olympics. Then, like, and yet people notice straight away that post Orlando, that you, like you said, the social media dropped off and everyone's like, well, what's going on? And because it generates that discourse, it generates more conversation that takes the heat off the fact that there's somebody else in the driving seat now. And instead of us like constantly talking about, you know, judging him, and, you know, there was all the chat about, oh, great, well, everything's fine until the derby happens. And then if it goes to shit, oh, well, that's because, you know, he's really on their side and all this bollocks, as far as I'm concerned. Mm. They could have actually pulled a blinder in how they've actually managed that, so that we're no longer talking about it and that's no longer the focus. So therefore, does it give him a bit of a step up because he's been left to actually get on with it?
Is that because we can't pay attention to any one subject for more than a few days? I don't know. Mark, what's your feeling? I mean, I called it resignation. What do you call it?
I just think that we could shorten the bun to match the sausage level without compromising the overall product. I think I'm not going to reflect on what's lost in that situation. But to your point, Rob, I am struggling to remember a time where the breaking news wasn't Everton are receiving loan opportunities from Moise Keane, but are more keen on a permanent transfer away. fuck, I'm ready to just loan the guy out now, just so that we don't have to read that anymore. And again, to your point, Rob, and I think it's a fantastic one that you raise, is that if he played for Liverpool, he'd have been sold for 50 million early on.
Yeah.
And that
100%.
That's all.
They've sold such crap to Southampton for more than that. I mean, it's insane.
I think it's called Jordan Ibe syndrome. Their ability to get really substantial fees for properly miserable footballers is probably their crowning achievement. And yet, as you rightly said, Moise Keane is not some donkey who couldn't hit the door of a barn. I was like, he's proved himself to be a capable striker at top level, arguably needs to be at that top level to be relevant. We ask him to be this focal figure of a team who is not necessarily excelling at anything. And that's potentially why he struggles. And yet, most strikers in the world would perform if you stick Angel Di Maria on one side and Neymar on the other. And I do get that, but it's one thing saying that and one thing doing it. And he's proven that he is able to do that. I appreciate that Paris Saint-Germain potentially have the power to go out and buy players who are a little bit better than Moise Keane. But you would expect that the queue of clubs is waiting very close behind them, and potentially, you know, I think with everything, both sporting and financial, that is going on at Inter Milan at the moment, I think that is probably one avenue that will be explored by both Moise Keane and Inter Milan in the next couple of weeks. Mm. But I think the thing that doesn't worry me at the moment is the supposed strengthening of teams around us. And I get why that does put fear into people, because it's horrible when you see Aston Villa going and spending loads of money on what players who we think Everton should be muscling people out of the way and signing. We've essentially been that club for transfer windows on end. And when you lose that kind of status in the window, it is horrible, because your instinct tells you that everyone around you is progressing while you are standing still. And that may well be the case, but if anyone thought that was an absolute certainty, then I'd refer you to Everton, because here we are. And we have on paper been doing that for so long. So I appreciate that some of these moves will come off for Aston Villa and for Leicester, who I think have done really good business as well. But I think that I'm happy to wait for half a season, potentially a season, before I figure out whether we've been left behind in that sense. And don't get me wrong, I think that we should be more active, and we all know that the areas of the pitch where that should happen. But probably the one area that concerns me is that I've got no intel or insight into this, but there feels like there's a tangible sense of disconnect between, yes, the fans, because we are all part of that. But when you've got players, you know, potentially isolating from COVID earlier in the summer, or being at the Euros, being at the Olympics, whatever it may be, it all feels incredibly fractured. Where are we now? 3 days away from the start of the season. And it feels as though, this could obviously go one of two ways. If Everton get 4 or 5 decent results at the start of the season, then all of that trepidation that we feel now goes very quickly out the window, because football, and that's what it is. But I've been apathetic in the past, Rob. That's a word that you used earlier on. I don't feel apathy towards this team at the moment, because I'm probably a little bit too concerned to be apathetic. When Carlo Ancelotti was the manager and things start to go wrong, there is an inherent level of confidence that things will pick up. And I think this is the reason why the hostility will grow quickly if Benitez comes across a series of bad results, is that people will be scared. And that's just the nature of being one of those teams who everyone thinks at this stage of the season could very quickly decline, as opposed to going the opposite way. It's probably a little bit too actively upsetting to be called happy. movie at the moment. And you, you know what? Regardless of what they are, you can't ignore the series of disasters that has culminated in our preseason being at the stage that it's at now. And
I wish we had like a month more. Like I wish that this, like maybe. I wish the season just, if they're going to have this asinine international break 3 weeks into the, you know, after the third game, was it after the third game? Right.
Yeah.
Why not just start this, you know, after a Euros and a Copa America and an Olympics, why not just start the season in September?
Yeah.
I mean, I know that sounds novel, but I'm just kind of like, part of the problem with all this that you're describing, this disjointed thing, is that the off season or the closed season, as Patty likes to correct me on saying, which whatever, is so short. Like there's not enough downtime for these players.
There's not enough downtime for the staff.
There's not enough time. Yeah. Not enough downtime for the staff. There's not an opportunity to just breathe. And look, you could leave the, you know, you could leave the window where it is now, like the deadline where it is now, start the season after it and you've got it completed before. And then I think everyone, if there was another month to go right now, I think everyone would be a little more, like they'd still be a little angsty, but you'd start to feel like, you know, look, players are resting. I can maybe even I as a fan can disconnect from this a little more. I do not even feel because of Copa America and because of the Euros and Richarlison and just hoping he didn't get injured at the Olympics. Like I have not had any real mental break from Everton this season, you know, during the summer. And I especially once Carlo left, it just, you know, we went from thinking we'd have a relatively whatever summer to having another here comes Everton kind of summer. Yeah. So, yeah, okay. So in that vein,
just on the subject of sort of transfers, I know you briefly touched on the financial elements of it.
Okay.
Do you think that the fact that we are in a summer where Inter Milan and Barcelona are having, and I assume other clubs could be thrown into this, but they're the high profile ones. The fact that they're having such financial issues, do you think that's preventing Everton from having a potentially bolder transfer window? And when I say bold, it's not beyond the realm of thinking that Everton would have gone out and signed Dwight McNeil and Denzel Dumfries in the first couple of weeks of the season, on the assumption that Moyes Keane leaves later on. And if that wasn't to happen, then you then start scrambling around for how do we make this money up? And do you know what? That potentially ends in someone like Richarlison leaving. And I'm not saying that that's the right way to go about it, but it is the more adventurous way to go about it. Do you think that a team like, obviously, the issues that Inter Milan have had, where they've had to have an almost fire sale. Is Marcel Brands trying to fire guard us from being in that situation? And is that the right thing to do? I appreciate that none of us have got the books in front of us for the club, but with that being so high profile this summer, I do feel that leads to hesitation from a club like ours, who, if you weren't an Everton fan and you were looking at this league table at a club who are potentially the next to be in this discussion of financial turmoil, we'd probably be up there lashing money at Bramley Moore and terrible footballers, because that's all we've done for the last few seasons. And I do think that probably comes into the thinking of it.
Yeah, like we've acknowledged, I think we were even talking about this in the middle of last season, what we thought the upcoming window would look like in this post, hopefully post. I mean, we're still kind of in the middle of it in some ways, but we're definitely in the a little further through it. But in a post-COVID season, if you will, economy, I think that most people, and I think we said basically the same thing, that there would be a lot of the richest of the rich clubs probably still selling big players, which is what you're seeing right now. But that overall, I thought it would be more of a, you know, a buyer's market in terms of if you wanted someone, you probably could get them for a relatively decent fee, because there are a lot of clubs that have lost a lot of money during all this that are going to need to just, you know, sell some. I'm struggling with it because my expectation in my understanding of Everton in terms of how they've operated from a transfer perspective is certainly an acknowledgement that spending money in and of itself without, you know, is not a solution without there being a greater plan and a, you know, a greater infrastructure at the club to set those investments, those players up for more success. Right. So I understand all that. I think where I am perturbed is that everything you just described about this financial climate and all of these things in regards to our clubs, to Everton's specific financial situation, these are not things that we just found out about a month ago. Mm-hmm. These are things that they've known for a long time. They've had time to plan this. If you're going to say to me, well, you know, we needed to wait till this summer to sell Moise Keane, I'd say, okay. Then you should have had a plan for what that negotiation was going to look like, and you should have found a way to do it. Now things can change, but my point is that even if you don't want to be in a position where your whole plan is centered around this one transaction being successful, because really you should not be in a position to where your whole summer budget. Yeah. And again, I'm not accounting nerd on, you know, football accounting nerd on Twitter. So whatever, you know, fucking swerve me with that shit. But what I can tell you is that it feels like from what everything we read, you know, I read smart people who write about this stuff, especially reading a lot of the stuff that Patty and Greg have written in The Athletic, but also, you know, just also in general, people kind of discussing the broader financial implications of everything. Like, it feels like we put all our eggs into the basket of selling Moise Keane. And if we could sell him, we'd have enough funds to do certain things. The problem is not that the problem, yes, is that we can't sell Moise Keane, sure. But the broader problem is that we made such poor investments previously and therefore having trouble offloading certain players for whatever reason. And it goes back to, Kay, what you said about, you know, do we as a club do it enough to put a positive spin and spotlight and image massaging on our players? You know, I don't know that, but what I do know is that we have put ourselves in a position where we have such little wiggle room that it was going to, you know how people joked before, it was like a gallows humor of one in, one out, you know, we have to buy to sell or sell to buy or whatever. Well, now that's actually here. And it's actually here in such a way that it feels like they were banking on getting this deal done and they haven't been able to. And the fact that this one deal not being made has stopped up our ability to spend. And I, again, not spend exorbitantly, which is the problem. We don't, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the fact that, look, sorry, you guys can call me whatever. I don't give a shit. I am here to throw all of your sacred cows into the fucking meat grinder, okay? But if you're, but the optics, so Kate, your point about the PR stuff, you've got a collection of fans who are watching this club have the same core holes in their squad, not for one season, not for two, but three, four seasons. Not address it. And then what does the club do this summer in the midst of all of Carlo leaving, appointing an unpopular manager, what have you? They decided to take some of the heat off with the super fans by being like, let's record a video of us throwing an extra year contract at Seamus Coleman. Like that is what is so frustrating, is that, you know, it's not about Seamus Coleman in particular. He is a symptom. And the fact that he is still the first choice right back at his age, at this stage of the career, is symptomatic of a broader structural issue at Everton that has put us in a position where we are going 4 years now without having signed a permanent replacement right back. And then the ability for us to just sign even a basic attacking forward that, you know, again, everyone wants the Marcel Brands bargain bin, you know, find him in the Belgian league and he's 21. You know what? Hey, I'm all for that, but we can't even spend 3 million or 5 million right now. We had to literally get Bernard off the books to afford Damari Gray at what I still think was a criminally low rate. Mm-hmm. Like, credit to Marcel Brands for Damari Gray, because I don't even know how he's going to play this season. And I guarantee you $1.7 million is still a bargain, because he just has basic traits that even if he's like 70% of the player Theo Walcott was, $1.7 million is nothing, right? But the fact that we're in that kind of position speaks to the financial mismanagement at the club. And you can blame it all on the players, and they do carry some of the responsibility, I guess. But we also have, what, five center halves at this club? But we only have, you know, two recognized strikers, and really it's one, and Richarlison is a striker on certain days, and, you know, Moise Kean doesn't want to be here, and we haven't even talked about all the weird Instagram drama of the last few days.
Well,
you know,
like, it's, yeah,
you've got all the discontent. So my point is that the environment, the culture and environmental change that I was sold on with Marcel Brands when he first came in, I'm not saying everything is all his fault, but I am, because I'm not, again, we talked about this ad nauseum. We don't know what he can and can't do. We don't know what remit he actually has. And the club likes it that way. The club does not want anyone to know who really makes all those decisions, so that the blame can be spread around to whomever is the target that day. But the bottom line is that things that I hoped would change when we appointed a director of football have not changed in some ways. And so we're in this situation where it's not about Marca spending spree. And I recognize the economic factors, but you do see clubs around us. And again, Aston Villa, whatever, you know, you can say that they're selling Grealish and then investing that money back in other players, whatever. But even just the ability, like I pointed this out earlier, Leicester had Fofana had that freak injury like a week ago, their center half, who I think is, you know, a really good player. And a week later, they're about to close the deal for Vestergaard from Southampton. Now, again, I don't think Vestergaard's that good. I think it's not about the player or that situation. It's more about just this idea that, wow, we have suffered a setback. We've got a hole. We need to go fill it. So it took them a whole week to do it. We can do it in 4 years. That's the stuff that scares me, guys. It's not about particular players. It is about a consistent inability. Like, let's remember the summer where Marcel Brands didn't sign a center half, and we were hoping to God these guys would stay fit. Like, this is the weird place that we're in, and I just don't know how we get out of it unless we begin to have real fortune-selling players. And, you know, a lot of people are like, hey, something will happen before the window ends, but – why should I be that confident about it?
Talk about mismanagement, whether it's brands, whether it's PR, whichever way you want to look at it. I suppose it's wider communications. The only person who's fully aware and having to deal with it on a daily basis, that the fact that Moise Kean is stopping us moving forward, is Moise Kean. So, you know, in terms of a PR campaign and managing culture, like you've said, that's a massive one for me. I think that's so important, and more so when it comes round to transfer. You know, like I said, attracting top talent, you've got to look like it's so basic. It's like when you go for a job, you don't want to go to work somewhere where everyone moans about having to work there, whether you're on 100 grand or not. It doesn't really matter, 100 grand a week or not. If it looks like a wicked place with an awesome culture and they practice what they preach, the people's club, you know, and look after their family, et cetera, whoever, you know, whoever that is, whether it's players, it's staff, it's the fan base, et cetera. You know, that universal experience that, you know, that experience should be universal. So like you've said, Rob, you know, having traveled thousands of miles, you know, dedicated as a fan to come over to experience Goodison, that couldn't be any further away from the fan experience if you live down the road, you know, and you literally go every week, etc. And more effort should be made to make that universal. I genuinely, and like we said, because it's not like he's shite, imagine being Moise Kean and going into work every day, you know, because you've got to feel that weight on your shoulders. It's like when you piss the manager off at work, you know, and you know you've got to go in, or it's like when you know you're leaving when you give a month's notice at work and you've got to work that notice. God, it is so painful. It doesn't matter what job you do. Yeah. But imagine if you're on his wages and, you know, clearly not the best of friends with, you know, with some of the hierarchy. That's got to be a pisser of a day at work, that.
Marcel,
and by the way, Moise Kean is at fault for a lot of this too. I mean, look, forget about fault. Mm-hmm. It hasn't worked out. But here's the thing: it worked out at PSG for him. It worked out to a large degree at Juventus for him. He's young. He's sellable by any other club. Like, why can't we sell him? Why can't we, you know, for instance, decide between Branthwaite, Holgate, and Keane and sell one of them? Or hell, you know, I love Yerry Mina, but if you told me, look, we got to sell Yerry Mina to raise funds and we're going to spend on other things, I'd be like, well, it sucks, but you know, we have five center halves. We can't afford to have five center halves, you know, senior center halves in this squad. Like, these are all things that just are about basic competency. And I should caveat all this by saying that, you know, they've got till the end of the month to get some things going, and it might. But having to live, it feels like living paycheck to paycheck right now, if that is a
And despite the fact analogy, that they are hell of a paycheck, you know what I mean? That's not just like I'm count my pennies at the end of the month. You've got to still feel the weight, you know, of those situations, surely.
It arguably hangs over you a little bit more so because of the sorts of numbers involved, and none of us are saying what a hardship that is. But I think the most obvious thing for me in this is that Marcel Brands definitely hacked Moise Keane's Instagram and deleted all of his Everton photos.
Mate, don't tell anyone you were here.
Hey, Mark, what do you make of – I want your quick take on this. What do you make of – there's two. Moise Keane, obviously, he deleted all his Everton content, which he – look, he probably is at the point where he feels desperate enough to be like, I'm going scorched earth because it's the only way that they'll really get going to get me out of
bridges,
here.
Hey. Baby.
Then he does the story with the particular font that I guess matches one of his PSG uniforms that says
– Sucks.
Hopefully back soon,
right?
Soon. Back soon, whatever, which I don't think was referring to us given the context of him deleting all his photos.
Yeah.
And then you have the other weird end of the spectrum with the Tom Davis to Newcastle rumors of him posting this. Just, it felt like the, I know it was Socrates, so it's like super classy and academic, but it felt very much like this is the sort of like teen angsty poetry I probably wrote when I was 13.
I couldn't make connections at all. You know, so the lad reads fucking hell.
No, okay. I know, like, you can be dismissive of it if you want. It may mean nothing, but the problem is that we have so little to go on that we're looking for things in places. Yeah. And again, I do find that particular, if you start reading that enough times, it's sort of like, that's a very odd thing to just randomly decide today to post on there, but whatever. Kate, you're right. It's probably nothing. But that's the point.
I'm getting really nervous.
We're so fucking thirsty right now for anything that this speaks to that larger issue of, you know, part of the issue with all that stuff you talk about in terms of what you're essentially describing is branding. The club brands itself really well in some areas, but they keep such a tight leash on the players and access and basic transparency about injuries and things that really shouldn't be such, you know, CIA level secrets, right? That it creates kind of this cold disconnect between the club and the fans and the players and the fans. And the players that do break through that are the ones that go super heavy on social media and engage, like Richarlison or, you know, But like Luca Dean is on Twitter and Instagram all the time. Yerry Mina is constantly on Instagram. Like, Yerry Mina's dog has an Instagram. Like, weird shit like that. Like, I appreciate, like, it's not a coincidence that some players fans feel more connected to because of those things. But you're right. The club does nothing to help facilitate some of those things. And then I think it leads to a broader disconnect. And so then we are, of course, searching the tea leaves of Instagram stories and font choices to decide whether this means something or it means nothing at all. So,
Rob, do you run Yerry Mina's dog's Instagram?
Mark, let me just tell you something. And I believe the dog's name is like Matanita or something like that. And it's this total, fucking Paris Hilton looking dog.
Oh my God. Rob, I have a question for you.
It belongs to his wife.
To the nearest 100, how many of Yerry Mina's dog's posts have you zoomed in on?
Zoomed in on? No, I don't know that I've zoomed in on. That sounds like a creepy question, but no. My point is just that, well, to answer your first question, Mark, though, like, if I could quit my job and just run Yeri Mina's dog's account for the same amount of money I make today, I would do it in a heartbeat. And I wouldn't care if you played at Everton or not. Like, I would just keep doing it. It'd be awesome. Like, you want me to just take photos of your dog a few times a week? Fuck yeah. I'll even write quippy quotes that are coming from the dog, and we can translate them into Spanish too.
It'll be great. Wow.
On that note, guys, we've just about run out of time for this week. I don't know about you guys, but I said we weren't going to get negative, but God, it got negative, didn't it? I think everything we said was fair, and I'll even go a step further. And Mark, you and I talked about this before, because Mark really helped me when I was at my most despondent ahead of Rafa being appointed. I think Mark made the point that, like, you know, like, look, this is just who we are, and it's just, this is just how it is, and we're not all guaranteed, or, you know, we don't all have this birthright to root for a club or to support a club that wins a lot of stuff. You know, your parents and grandparents back in the day, they got it, and that sometimes is just how it is. Sometimes they get the good stuff when it comes to sports, and you know what you get? You have better healthcare this time, you know, at this point in history than they did. Your teeth might be better. Your skin might be better. Like, you know, your ability to order things and have Amazon deliver it within 24 hours. They didn't have that back then. All they had was the best football team in Europe. There's give and take in life, guys. So I think that you have to focus on the fact that finally, we as a collective, and hopefully this is me later this year, like later this season, but we get back to Goodison.
Yeah.
That's a good thing no matter what, because it's all about us as a family and a community. And so, yeah, sometimes that family has gatherings that make you a little crazy, but they're still your family, and we're all still a family, and we're going to get through this together like we get through everything else. So I figure if you just keep your expectations less about – don't worry. I think if there is something liberating about going to this season – you know, again, I don't want to call it apathy, because I think Mark's right. It's not apathy. But if you're just kind of okay with the fact that Everton is going to be Everton and there's nothing you can do about it, and it'll be nice to be back at the park. And if something good happens every once in a while, because happiness is not a constant state, it is moments. Hey, we'll win a game we shouldn't win at Goodison. We'll win a game on the road we probably shouldn't win. And of course, we'll lose to, we'll lose to some crap side that we shouldn't. Yeah, Brentford, you know, thank God we're not playing him in week one. I mean, that's Everton, that's life. And, you know, we're going to make it. And it'll all be okay. All right. With that, guys, I've got to jump. Thanks to Mark, as always. Well, Mark,
you got this. It's really, we can't finish. Kate, I'm really sorry to do this late on. Me and Rob are doing a quick research project.
Oh, God.
Kate, do you wash your legs in the shower?
Oh, my God. I have four inches of leg. Of course I have to wash my legs in the shower.
Kate, you're on the naughty list. Kate, back to you.
44 inches of leg. That's the what a way to describe it. Kate washes herself. I wash this.
Sorry, I'm just writing the show title down.
Oh, of Kate, I just want to tell you. 44 inches of luck.
Kate, I just want to tell you. I want to tell you, Kate, that I admire the women of your part of the world now more, knowing that you've had to survive in a dating pool with dudes whose idea of competent hygiene is that, I don't know,
Rapity.
The water will just kind of basically just take care of it on its own. Well, you know, like, that's not how washing works.
What's the matter with you people?
Like, just wash yourselves, you filthy animals. All of
there's here. A PR line for you. That's the whole campaign. Wash yourself.
Look. You guys know the people of Liverpool, the city of Liverpool. I love it. It's a second home to me. I even say when I get there, I'm home. You know that. Clean yourself, sort yourselves, okay? Gross. Clean yourselves, you animals. And with that, we are done for this week on Kickabout. We'll have a post-match coming up this weekend. We'll have mailbag. We'll have all the usual shows. We'll be back next week. I don't know if I'll be on post-match, but I hope for those of you who are getting back to Goodison this weekend, I'm incredibly jealous. I hope you have a great time. You've certainly earned it. And let's all hope that those tickets get sorted so that you don't have to get in line tonight before Saturday's game. For Kate Riley James and my co-host Mark Mosey, I'm Rob Vera. We will see you guys next week for more Kickabout. Take care.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.